So, Meghna, here's a fact.
Hit me.
Right now, the MBTA is considering two different proposals for fare hikes and service increases, right?
Yep.
Under one of them, fares would jump from $170 to $240 on a Charlie card and up to $3 on a single ticket ride, making that proposal the largest fare increase by percentage since 1949.
Whoa.
That's from transit historian Bradley Clark of the Boston Street Railway Association.
So that's a fact, and therefore it's no surprise that also a fact. Riders are furious, and
right.
not just at the proposed fare hikes, but at the draconian service cuts the T is considering as well. Riders have been protesting, shouting down, and even booing transportation officials at public hearings since the start of this year.
Transportation officials are starting to feel the pressure. This week, the state's transportation secretary said in order to avoid massive service cuts, the MBTA is now desperately searching for other revenue sources.
And the secretary joins us now. Richard Davey, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, listeners, this is your chance. There are still more public hearings until about the middle of March, but if you haven't made it to one yet, what's your question or comment for Transportation Secretary Richard Davey? Would you prefer, I should say, a huge fare hike over service cuts? And in a few minutes, we're going to get into the structural problem that the T really faces, a problem whose ultimate solution may be on Beacon Hill. So I wonder, frustration with the T is one thing, very understandable, but is it time for riders to focus their efforts on legislators instead? Call us with your questions or comments about the MBTA at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And as always, we're on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Secretary Davey, more than 4,000 people have shown up to these public hearings so far. When you're standing there at those meetings, what reaction have you had?
Just listening to folks, I mean, certainly this is the reason why we're engaged in this civic dialogue, to listen to customers. So obviously, one, Meghna, was just to let folks know the dire consequences of what we face. And even if we're able to, come up with something or solve even a portion of this year, it only pushes the problem off to next year. So while the deficit this year is $161 million, 3 years from now, the T's deficit is $330 million.
So it doubles almost.
It doubles, largely due to debt service, some other reasons. So this has been as much, I think, an education process for our customers, trying to not only come up with some solutions with their help, but also to educate them as to why we are in this predicament.
But do you feel educated, if I may say, by them in terms of the the very difficult choices that they're
Absolutely.
Left with and the pain that riders would feel if with these proposed service
Absolutely.
Cuts and fare
so
increases.
Whether it was in Newton listening to customers who talked who use a school for the blind who would be severely impacted, to mothers talking about getting their kids to school using the MBTA as their mode of transportation. We'll be in Hull later in the month, and I'm sure I'll hear from folks in Hull that some of the cuts that we put on the table will literally cut them off from all transportation options. Mm. And that is, unfortunately, some of the things we put on the table. There's no doubt about it. As we said throughout these hearings, these are people. These aren't just cuts and numbers.
Well, let's talk a little bit more specifically about what you told the Boston Globe a little earlier this week, that those massive service cuts may be a little less likely than we heard before, but that the steep fare increases will probably be on the way. So does this mean that the T has settled on a plan?
No. Unfortunately, the Globe's story misrepresented what I said. I did have a chance to talk to the author yesterday, but I think the attribution to transportation leaders is further down about the likelihood of cuts. We don't have a plan yet to mollify some of these significant service cuts. We're still listening to folks. But those cuts, we're still on the table as far as we're concerned at this point.
Has it come to the point where the T might be asking for other plans, other scenarios? Because the two that you have so far haven't really received any support from any quarter, I can imagine.
No, that's fair. But I'm not sure at the end of the day whatever we do is going to be unanimously supported. I think it's very difficult for us to see a scenario where certainly some service that is underperforming is cut and a fare increase is done. I mean, as we talked about, the MBTA, it's $1.25 to ride our bus. It's the cheapest bus of any major transit agency in America. The subway about the same. We haven't had a fare increase in 5.5 years. So I think to try to close this gap, that's probably going to be, you know, some way we do it. And at the same time, we're looking seriously at service that significantly underperforms. We have just a handful of riders. So we're really trying to focus on service that impacts the least amount of our customers.
Mm. Well, let me ask you about sort of the broad world of alternative proposals that we've been hearing a lot about recently as well. I mean, as you know, the MBTA Advisory Board, which represents cities and towns, came up with its own plan. It's not an official one in terms of officially elected transportation officials, but these are people who know what they're talking about. And under their scenario, they basically said 25% fare increase, so not in the 40% range that some of the T's proposals look at, but also, you know, expanding the world of revenue streams to other businesses and institutions who benefit from the very fact that we have public transit, you know, schools, downtown businesses whose employees come forward and backward to and from work every day. I guess my question is, what the MBTA Advisory Board is getting at is, isn't it time for the T to look beyond just the standard fare increase service cut routine to really bolster the T's revenues?
Sure. And I think, you know, the T has over the last several years, it's squeezed a lot of non-fare revenue through its real estate, its advertising program. I mean, I was in your program last year hawking flip-flops. I mean, we'll pretty much do, you know, whatever we can do to raise fares, or non-fare revenue, I should say.
I have to say, though, you say that, and I appreciate your good humor about it, but realistically, I mean, here's a real proposal that's on the table.
Agreed, but it's a proposal I can't implement. So, and I'm a realist as well. So asking institutions, colleges, universities, I'll be frank, we've talked to some institutions in the past about doing a student pass. There wasn't a lot of interest. Asking, you know, some cultural institutions to pay more. Again, I don't see them, you know, knocking at my door to hand us over a payment. So I think those are interesting proposals, but they will take a lot more than just me declaring, you know, today that I think that they work. Juxtapose that with some of the other proposals on the table, merging the T police, for example, with state police. Interesting. But all that does is just push the bill off to a different pot when it comes to the taxpayer. The DOT, which has its own revenue problems and its own budget problems, actually already subsidizes about $130 million of state police. So that's likely to have a boomerang effect that I'll just be paying for it out of a different pot. So I think, you know, Massport's an interesting one. That's one we are looking at for the ferry service, some Silver Line. I think that has merit, and we've been studying that with Massport for the last couple of months.
So just to be clear, this is the part of the proposal that says move ferry service off the T entirely to Massport.
That's right. That's right. Or Silver Line service, for example, which services the airport. There has to be a nexus between service and the airport or the airport assets. But so I think those are interesting. But, you know, at the end of the day, a number of the proposals, I think, are, while interesting, require a lot more than just me and our board, you know, making the decision. It would require...
There are other stakeholders, essentially,
that
you don't have direct control over.
And nor have they indicated a willingness to do that.
Hmm. Maybe that might change in the future when their employees have a tougher time getting to work. But let me ask you, there are things sort of just in the fair pricing and planning world that you could do. I mean, for example, you I know you're familiar with this, all over the world, people sometimes have to deal with zone pricing based on where they're going to travel in a system. Or maybe the price of a monthly pass should be markedly different than a single ride to get more people to buy monthly passes. I mean, I've never seen that kind of thinking folded into T fare proposals as they've come down the pike.
So on the monthly pass, I disagree. If you buy a monthly pass under either one of our proposals, it would be cheaper than saying taking you know, a bus and a subway trip 23 times a day. So I think that's something that, and we're going to continue to do. We're going to make sure that the Charlie card, the price is cheaper than using a Charlie ticket. On your question of distance-based pricing, obviously we have that on commuter rail for fixed route, and we do have it for some bus routes. You actually have to pay a little more. I think that you will probably see, and we've heard this from some folks. Some folks in the ferry have said, for example, charge us more, just don't cut the service. We've heard that from some, I think, suburban customers as well on suburban routes. When we did the fare 6 years ago, 5 years ago, fare increase, we heard from customers then that they didn't like the principle of distance-based fare or paying an exit fee, for example, at Braintree, which you used to have to do. You actually had to pay an exit fare at Braintree to get off the red line. We eliminated that because customers asked. But I think your point's well taken, which is in the future we should be studying some more creative proposals.
I do wonder when we reach the point of lesser of two evils in terms of different pricing alternatives.
Well, we may be there.
We may be there. I want to ask you one thing. You mentioned that, yes, the last fare hike was 5 years ago
Correct.
Or so. Since the year 2000, so 11 plus years, there have been three fare increases. They haven't come regularly. They come, you know, whenever the T once again enters a major budget deficit, essentially. Right. I wonder why not include some sort of, you know, annual fare increase to in the overall plan, you know, peg it to inflation or something so that it's not such a shock each time.
I think it's a great idea. It's one that we are looking at. You know, we have a 5-year capital budget, and I think perhaps having a 5-year operating budget that we revise each year or refresh each year is something that we would be strongly looking at. And I think your point's well taken. The Globe talked about that as well, which is maybe having regular but more modest fare increases. The problem, though, is that I know what the deficits are going to be the next 3 years, and I can't tell you that 5% fare increase 2 years from now or even 10% fare increase is going to solve the problem. It just can't. I mean, given the T's pro forma and you look at the financial situation today and where it's going to be 2 or 3 years from now, I would be being dishonest if I said we could do a 5 or 10% fare increase 2 years from now and all would be fine. It will not be. But if we can get the T on its financial footing, we'll talk about this a little later, particularly with the debt, if we're able then to get it on financial footing and then do these modest and regular fare increases, I think that would be a great model for us to adopt for the long term.
Okay, but for now, the T is a starship whose thrusters are on full, but it's still getting sucked towards a black hole, it sounds like. We're talking to the Transportation Secretary for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. He is Richard Davey, about the MBTA and the two very serious proposals for fare increases and service cuts that are on the table right now. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Your people want to talk to you, Secretary.
Great.
Joe
Good.
Is calling from Newburyport. You're on the air, Joe.
Hi. Good luck, Richard, with it. I know you got a big task ahead of you. I'm wondering where the nearest, the next, I have some comments, but I'm also wondering where the Newburyport area meeting is going to be next, or the area. Also, some ideas. Tolls, I'm all for it. The more the merrier. Everyone benefits from having public transit. Everyone should pay because they're going to pay one way or another by longer trips in traffic. Also, gas taxes, also mixed use, better use of the facilities. If you come up to Newburyport, we have a train station that was built and is not even used. There's tons of land up here. You could have condos, you could have affordable housing, you could have mixed use, could have retail. Also, much better use of your ad space on all your vehicles.
Hey, Joe, I got to ask you a quick. Joe, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I got to ask you a question. So you live in Newburyport. Does that mean that you'd be willing to pay tolls to come down to Boston, get on 95, pay some tolls?
You bet your sweet patootie. You bet your sweet patootie. I often go over the Tobin Bridge, and I think, well, one of these bridges, and I think, well, I got to pay $3. And a lot of times, I go over a certain one when I don't have to pay anything. There's only one that you have to pay $3, and I forget which one it is.
I often come into Boston
not having to pay anything.
Joe, thank you for your call, Secretary Davey.
I love your candor, first of all, so thank you for that. A couple of things. One, on your principle about tolling, so a couple of things there. I mean, one is that current federal law does not allow us to toll current roads, so like 93, 95. Even if we wanted to do it, we don't have permission to do it. And two, if we did that, the toll revenue typically goes to the toll asset. In other words, the tolls that are on the Tobin go to pay for the Tobin. The tolls that are on the turnpike go to pay for the turnpike. So, but your principle, though, and I want to touch on this quickly. Your principle about how maybe we don't all use the MBTA, but we all benefit from the MBTA, is a really important one, because I've heard from some customers who say, "Hey, you know, I pay gas tax, and some of this goes to transportation. Why am I subsidizing the MBTA?" Well, the answer is in part because you will, if the MBTA didn't exist, they would be somewhere between, you know, 200,000 and 400,000 cars on the road. We move 1.3 million people a day. So while we may all not use it, we all benefit from it. And the vice versa is true. You know, we have a tax structure where we pay for things. You may pay property taxes but not have kids. You're paying for schools. You may be paying for, out of your income tax, other government services that you don't pay for. But we've determined as a society or as a commonwealth that public transportation is a public good. So I wanted to make that point. Ad space, quickly, I disagree. We certainly can't sell all of our ad space. Ad space certainly has been hit real hard by the recession, and so we did see a significant dip in advertising revenue in 2008, 2009. It's coming back, but we sell probably $10 to $15 million worth of ads each year on buses and stations, and we have a pretty good program. We always do better, though. We'll keep pushing at that.
Claudette is calling from Newton. You're on the air, Claudette.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I don't think that there should be a fare increase. I think the actual fare should be collected. Many times, at least a third of the time when I take the 57 bus from Kenmore Square, there is a T employee at the back of the bus welcoming everybody on. Thank you for riding the T, and no fare is collected.
Claudette, thank you.
I see this again and again.
Yeah, Claudette, I was just going to say that I'm a Green Line rider, and I see a lot of beleaguered Green Line drivers trying to get people who've aborted in the second or third set of doors, especially in the above ground areas, to come up to the front and pay their fare. And with everyone on their iPods, no one seems to be listening.
So, Claudette, let me ask you a question, if I may. What time do you usually take the bus?
Well, this was at that particular time, it was in the afternoon.
Afternoon,
it varies when I take the bus,
okay. But
it seems to, it happens very frequently. And if it's a game day at Fenway, the entire, you know, I've taken the Green Line, the train, they fill that train. They don't take any fare at all. The same goes for the 57 bus, bus after bus. They line up, they open the doors, in everybody goes. End of story.
Okay. Well, obviously, we should be collecting every fare. And so with regard to the 57, I'll make sure I talk to my folks. As it goes to the Green Line, I agree. I'm a Green Line rider, too, and I do see surface confusion, to say the least, sometimes, particularly on the B and C lines. We've had some more inspectors out recently doing some more quick fare evasion checks. I think part of our problem, frankly, is that the fare evasion fine is $15, hardly a deterrent, and we'll be filing legislation in the next couple of weeks to raise that significantly. New York charges $250, Washington is about $100. I think that's another tool we can give to the MBTA staff.
Can you put Charlie card scanners on the rear doors for Green Line trains?
We could, but to your point, though, I mean, if we did that, it's still, you would have to have the customer then swipe, right? So, and I think, you know, we have a bit of an honor system, unfortunately, the Green Line. We certainly, I guess, don't have some honorable customers out there. But having, I think, a enhanced enforcement procedure, you know, we also have the challenge earlier about the boarding question, right? So we are pushing people up to that first door, but then it slows down boarding along the Green Line as well. So if you open all three doors, it's a balance between making sure we get every fare collected and at the same time, you know, keeping the trains moving, if you will. But, you know, for the bus is no excuse. I mean, that should be collected, no problem, no doubt. And I'll find out on 57 why.
Secretary Davey, if we may take a step back,
please.
I want to be clear for listeners where a huge part of the T's just long-term funding revenue problems come from. And it's all lumped into the very laudable idea that the legislature passed in 2000 about forward funding.
Correct.
That the T should be very responsible and actually budget for its next year's expenses.
Absolutely.
But within that piece of legislation, or around the same time, the state also transferred an enormous debt load to the MBTA, right? I mean, about a third
Correct.
Of the total debt of the T comes from capital costs for meeting the state's obligation to improve public transit due to federal funding received from the Big Dig. Now bear with me here, okay?
Because I'm bearing with you. Go ahead.
And you know this story, but for me, the logic circle gets a little absurd. Because servicing the T's total debt eats up almost every single dollar of revenue generated from fares.
Correct.
So to fill the resulting budget gap, the T has to raise fares, as we found this year. Still with me, everyone? Because raising fares then could cut ridership. I've seen, you know, 7-15%.
Correct.
A significant amount, which means that more people would end up driving, which not only would then further cut into fare revenue, maybe, but ironically, because of all those other people now back on the roads in their cars, it might erase the gains we've got from Big Dig mitigation efforts in public transit. So by trying to improve public transit through using Big Dig debt, we've actually maybe harmed it. I mean, is that not kind of crazy?
Well, you've boiled it down, and the answer is yes. I mean, so not only do we have, and again, the T, just to be clear, the T didn't pay for the tunnels, the road, the bridges related to the Big Dig. To your point, it was transit projects that had to be committed to in order to get the environmental permit to get the Big Dig done in the first place. The state was responsible for that from 1989 through 2000, and then it handed the bill to the T to the tune of about $1.7 billion. There were two other flawed assumptions in forward funding. One was that tax growth would be about 5% each year. Of course, that hasn't happened.
Which in 1999-2000 seemed like a realistic
thing. I would argue that was probably too rosy, but we've had two recessions as a result. And two, That there was a assumption that the T's operating costs would be reduced by 2% each year, with no plan behind that whatsoever. So yes, the T has cut headcount by about 1,000 people in the last 10 to 15 years. We're running more service than ever. But at the same time, you know, we're paying more for health care. We're the largest consumer of electricity in the Commonwealth. Those prices have not gone down. And then the debt service question, among other things. Paratransit, you know, that's cost is doubling about every 6 years. So a lot of assumptions were in that model that were flawed and thus have really, you know, put us where we are today.
Well, I'd like to focus on the big dig debt servicing portion of this because, you know, of the T's total debt service, as we said, about a third of it is because of the debt acquired through mitigation efforts or requirements from the big dig. Is it? I mean, that's basically equivalent to your budget gap this year. It's about $160-ish million.
So we pay, this year we will pay about $125, $135 million of debt service related to big dig commitments. That's right. So our deficit would then, in that instance, be, you know, $20 million, $22 million.
So, I mean, here's the obvious question. Is it time for you to go to Beacon Hill and start advocating for the state to take the big dig portion of the T's debt back to the books of the Commonwealth?
Well, I think that's one, you know, scenario, one alternative. You know, I'd say a couple of things first. One is that the state government, the governor, rightfully so, pushed transportation reform to make sure the T was doing everything it could prudently. I mean, look, you know, we continue to push hard to be a leaner, meaner organization. We've had pension reform, so it's no longer the juicy 23 and out. Our employees are now moving into the GIC. They're paying more for their health care. We just negotiated the toughest collective bargaining agreements in the history of the T for wages and whatnot. A lot of our employees are part-time. A lot of the drivers are part-time. So it's not as if the T over the last few years hasn't tried to squeeze as much as it can. But it was prompted to do that through reform.
So then what would you have? What would you do then? Because this is a structural problem that was created through legislation.
That's right. So I think what I'm leading up to the point, which is I think we have demonstrated to the best of our ability an opportunity to cut costs where we can without cutting service, without hurting the customer. So the old reform before revenue, and we've really squeezed reform very hard. I think the big dig debt is one option, but again, if you move the big dig debt back to the state has to pay for that in some way, shape, or form. So that's either cuts or more revenue as well. So I am very cognizant that, you know, I'm Secretary of Transportation. I don't run the T. So we've got to be thinking more broadly as an administration. I just can't be foisting a transportation problem off to Health and Human Services or Education, for example. We have to think broadly about what our priorities are.
Well, I understand that your colleague, the Secretary of Administration and Finance, Jay Gonzalez, has said it's not even a realistic solution from a budget perspective. But on the other hand, you know, I take your point about rearranging deck chairs on the budgetary Titanic of the Commonwealth. Not to say that we're sinking, but that's what it sounds like. You know, you can't move pieces around and solve the whole problem. No one's asking for a total solution, but I guess writers have been telling you, 4,000 plus, we need at least a partial solution that you yourself say is more than a Band-Aid.
Correct. And I think that this, again, this public process has been very, very helpful, not only to educate, not only to hear from our customers about what their concerns are, but also to educate them about, again, a long-term solution. And look, we've had a lot of legislators, political leaders. Mayor Menino was at our BPL, Boston Public Library hearing last week. We've had a lot of legislative leaders come out and listen as well and see that this is a concern.
Let's take another call. Tom is calling from Winthrop. You're on the air, Tom.
Yeah, Mr. Davies, thank you for taking the call.
No, thanks, Tom.
Mr. Davies, what's the story on the T keeping on a subsidy for the privately run buses that may be remaining?
So that's one of the considerations, Tom, that could be cut. You are correct that we do run some, just for other listeners, we do run suburban and other service that we just privately contract. That is also a loss leader, like most service we run, just about all service we run. It is subsidized in some way, shape, or form. So that's one thing that we're looking at, was to either eliminate the subsidy altogether or to significantly reduce the subsidy, which in turn would mean that fares would go up.
Thank you for your call, Tom. Let's go to Swampscott, where Paul is on the line. Welcome to Radio Boston, Paul.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a union federal employee, and right now we're going into our second year of a pay freeze. Not something that we wanted, we voted for, but to help the federal government balance their books, we were put into a two-year pay freeze, which actually saved $60 billion over 2 years for the federal government. Now, I know you've talked about some belt-tightening measures on your employees, but I know a couple MBTA employees, and they're still very well paid and great benefits. And I'm wondering if that was a consideration, is to share a little bit of the pain.
Sure.
And maybe, as the other caller pointed out, the bus driver who's letting people pile on and not pay, put a pay freeze in for a year or two, and then that person might not be doing that anymore.
So, Paul, I appreciate the question. We're in collective bargaining right now for about 10 or so of our unions. We just did achieve collective bargaining. All those unions either took a pay freeze in their first year of their collective bargaining or a pay freeze in their second year. For those who took a pay freeze in their first year, they're also paying more in health care. So actually, for the average employee in those bargaining units, their pay went down because they're paying more in health care. So, you know, to your point, I think we can always look at more. We're talking about maybe tweaking the pension again. All that doesn't save us a lot of money up front. You know, a lot of the management team at the MBTA didn't have a pay raise in almost 7 years. We gave them the first one last year, but only for merit-based raises, not all folks. And I think in part, you know, that was my call, in part because I think we need to motivate our better managers. And I think that's probably something we're going to look at. John Davis, the acting GM, just put another hiring freeze on last week. And to your point, we only have, out of all of our employees, I think, you know, probably 250 are not in union positions. So we've really tried to pare back on our, you know, our so-called overheads and whatnot. We have the lowest overhead of any major transit agency in the U.S.
Mm. Secretary Davey, final question to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like no one saw this coming, right?
Correct.
I'm just going to read a couple titles from reports in the past 4 or 5 years. Transportation Finance in Massachusetts, an Unsustainable System, 2007. Born Broke, that's from the MBTA Advisory Board, 2009. And the first chapter from another 2009 independent review of the MBTA, The Outlook is Bleak. And now I hear you say that in the next few years, the budget gap for the MBTA, the deficit, is going to rise to more than $330 million. Which just gives me nightmares about what that means for the maintenance backlog on the
mm-hmm.
T, the healthcare and pension costs, et cetera. Question is, how long can this go on?
Not much longer. And I think that's been, you know, that's really, I think, the message that we're trying to convey, which is the T has raised fares, to your point, 3 times in the last 10 years, 11 years. It's reduced costs. Again, we can always do more to reduce costs, but it can't last.
Is the system on verge of a breakdown?
I wouldn't characterize it in that. It's safe for sure, but just in terms of its financial footing, if we don't solve this, then the MBTA service zone will certainly shrink in the next couple of years.
Hmm. Richard Davey is the Secretary and Chief Executive Officer for the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. He is the Commonwealth Secretary of Transportation. Secretary Davey, thank you so much for joining us
again.
Thank you. Listeners, always want to know what you think. He said a lot. We're feeling a lot out there on the green, orange, red, blue lines and all those buses. Let us know at radioboston.org. Up next, some troubling new research from Harvard Medical School about gender non-conforming children. Those would be, say, boys who like pink and girls who like blue. They are much more likely to experience abuse in the home. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Adam Ragusea today. This is Radio Boston.